Good morning, David.
Good morning.
Forgive me if my English is not very good because.
Perfect. Absolutely perfect.
Let's go straight. You are from the States?
Yeah.
How does it feel to be a foreigner in France?
Foreigner? I don't know, because, you know, there's a lot of different kinds of foreigners in France. There's foreigners that are celebrated and there's foreigners that are vilified, that are treated as villains and criminals. And so I happen to be on the side of the fence of foreigners that are treated with a certain kind of celebrity, just from where I'm born. I mean, New York is just like anywhere else in the world, but for France, it has some kind of particular meaning or sense because of the films, because of the books, and because of the culture. The cultural relationship between France and America, France and New York particularly, going back a long time, but particularly since the 50s and 60s, when we had a very fusional artistic and intellectual relationship. So there is that kind of, you know, residue. Anytime I say I'm from New York, people have these ideas about what that could mean. But I could be terribly uninteresting, and I still have that benefit of that nationality, which I didn't earn. You know, my parents birthed me in New York. If not, we've only spent a couple of generations in New York. My family's from Poland, Jews from Poland, and on my father's side, Greeks who fled the civil war in Greece in the 40s. And so, yeah, I mean, it's weird to be. I mean, how is it like to be a foreigner anywhere? It feels.
Do you feel like a New Yorker? Yes.
I don't know. I kind of feel like I'm more capable of being an individual here in the sense that I'm not. I don't sense myself to be culturally obligated in any sense. You know, I don't feel like I have to obey by certain social norms that the French kind of are born and raised to understand. And I feel like I have a pass because I'm not from this country, that I can kind of live by my own social norms, my own social guidelines. And that's liberating, you know, in the sense that when you go back to your own country, you're expected to be obedient to these social norms and these social rules. And so I do feel that that's sort of liberating, that I have a pass, that I can kind of be both inside and outside. I can be in that middle ground between being included and being excluded in the best of both worlds, you know? Unlike maybe someone from the Arabic countries who have the worst of both worlds in the sense that they could be extremely interesting and intelligent and learned and knowledgeable, and just because of the color of their skin or because of their looks, they do get excluded from the conversation or ignored at best, and at worst become the victims of violence, you know, in this country. And I think this country does have a big problem with race, and it's clear to me when we look at how different foreigners are viewed, you know, because you have these nationalist groups that are saying, stop foreigners from coming in the country, close the borders, let's keep ourselves nice and French. But no one cares about me. No one's gonna try to kick me out of this country. I'm American, I'm from New York. I mean, we have great diplomatic ties, America and France. And what they're saying is basically kick the Arabs out and send the Africans back to Africa. And that's tough. It's tough to hear because I feel closer to the Arab immigrants than I do to the French people, in the sense that we share a commonality, which is that we're immigrants, which is that we come to this country to live and to make a new life. And why should it be easier for me than for them?
Why are you focused on Arabic people?
Because
we had waves of immigration, like before Arabic people have migrated a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, before long time ago, it was Portuguese people, mm-hmm. Italian people, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I guess the reason I'm focused on Arab, the Arab community in general, is because this is, well, if you look back to 1960s and 50s in the American Civil Rights Movement with the rights of Black Americans, that was the struggle. The struggle was for the rights of Black Americans, for equal social treatment, for equal legal treatment. And that was a hard-fought battle, and I would still argue that it's not finished. In America and in France and in England and in the Nordic countries, there is a tremendous amount of racism directed towards the Arabic world. Evidently, that's been an increase since September 11th, since the rise in this kind of global fear against Islamic terrorism. And
much more than in France.
Say again?
Much more than in France.
Yeah, I mean, in France, there's a tremendous amount of fear of the kind of Islamic terrorism, given the proximity, but also, and I don't think it's justified. I think it's a political tool.
Yeah.
Used by America and its allies, particularly France and England, to pass a series of tough legislation against that limits the rights of their citizens. You know, we see the espionage, the spying done by the French government, the American government. You have PRISM in France, and we have the NSA that has invaded our rights, invaded our privacy, and has been openly spying on us for many years. And they have been given, you know, more and more freedom to do so since the quote-unquote rise of Islamic terrorism, Islamic fundamentalism. And I think it's important today, as it was in the 60s with the women's movement, the feminist movement, and with the civil rights movement around the same time, or even a little bit before, in 63 in America. And I think that's the movement today. The movement today is focusing on the rights, the social rights and the human rights and the legal rights of the Arabic community. Because we see a rise in hate crime against Arabs in America and in France also, we see an unjust and disproportional attention placed on young, particularly Arab men, by the police. And these social pressures, they create an atmosphere of violence. And they create an atmosphere of tension between these communities. And I think it's our responsibility to fight for the rights of our fellow human beings so that they can enjoy equal rights. The rights that we have. Because they're French. You know, what they don't say is that, well, what you said before, just a moment ago, which is that many of these Arab families and these young people who were born and raised in this country, their parents came here 2 or 3 generations ago. So they're French. They're French. They were born and raised in French culture. Their parents oftentimes were born and raised in French culture. And they are always treated as immigrants or foreigners or second-class citizens. They're always treated as Arabs, not as French, even though they are born speaking French as a first language. They're born, you know, going to French schools with French friends. And so I think that's why I'm interested in this question of, you know, Arab immigration.
Excuse me. Those people, they belong to the third, maybe the third generation. And in France, they are Arabic. And in, for example, Morocco, they are French.
They're French, yeah. Yeah, listen, I mean, I think some of the greatest literature and art and the greatest social movements have come from these communities, you know, these communities that are being targeted from all sides and are being forced to synthesize and to become something, you know, greater than themselves or greater than any, you know, anybody can ask of them to be. And you see that again with the civil rights movement or with the feminist movements. I think it's important that we recognize the importance of this racial question, which is, what is it like to be an Arab person? person, man or woman, in this generation. This generation, when we say terrorism and we immediately think Arab. I mean, I remember in the 90s when we said terrorist, I thought of, you know, skinny white dude with a shaved head blowing up the Oklahoma City federal building. You remember the Oklahoma City bombing in the 90s?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it was the 90s, right? It was early 2000s. Yeah, it was the 90s. And that was for me and for us the image of terrorism, you know, and I think that all changed, obviously, in the last 10, 15 years of what it is to be a terrorist. And I think there's an agenda behind that. I think there's an agenda to I don't know how you could say, a sort of continuation of this manifest destiny that's been going on ever since the beginning of civilization, which is empires continue to expand and grow, and there are casualties to that, evidently. I think the biggest casualty to this moment in history is the Middle Eastern world, which is slowly but surely under threat. Their people are under threat, their way of life is under threat. And that obviously, evidently forces them to radicalize. Same with the Irish, with the relationship with the Irish and the English. I don't condone violence in any context, but you see that the Irish people have this, you know, we look at today and we look at the Irish people and we say they're just like the English or just like the Scottish or the Welsh, but they're their own independent people. And their struggle is one that's unfortunately turned to violence at this point in time, because violence is always the last resort of a people on the brink of extermination, cultural extermination. And so we have to think long and hard about this question of culture and of identity, what we could do better as citizens, as individuals here and over in the States, to be more sensitive to that. You know, I feel like it's a little bit, not my sole responsibility, but I feel responsible in the sense that if I get to walk around and I behave how I'd like to behave without worrying about getting stopped by the police or getting worried about being profiled in a store or being the victim of some kind of racial violence. I don't have to worry about that, but I am a foreigner, and I have this special privilege of being able to, of having my country be a celebrated country, and my language be a celebrated language.
How does that feel from what you said, I guess, to be in France and being celebrated, and compared to your opinion? I think your opinion is that America is not going the good way.
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, I think it's, you know, I feel, I haven't earned, you know, this celebration at all. There's nothing earned by it. I've done nothing to be celebrated. And when people immediately react to my nationality with this kind of good cheer and benevolence, it puts me not at ease. And I think that, particularly because no matter where we're from, politics is complicated, and I think New York is something of a graveyard or mausoleum, in the sense that there is no more cultural production coming out of New York anymore. I mean, New York was culturally interesting in the 60s, yeah, and maybe even in the 70s, but since then it hasn't really been interesting. New York has sold itself as New York, and that's what it is now. New York is New York. New York is not...
New York is not the States.
New York is not the States, but New York is no longer the culture capital of the world. New York is where you go to sign business agreements for music or for art or for whatever, but it's not really a place that creates so much art anymore. I mean, you have these little areas, maybe some places in Brooklyn, but I mean, it's left. The cultural movement has left New York a long time ago.
So where is it?
Where is it? It's dispersed, you know. There's a lot of things happening in England, in Bristol, and I mean, I don't know enough about these local spots, but definitely spots in England, I've seen some interesting things happening. You have in the States also. I mean, it's different because with the internet, with the advent of the internet, with the evolution, technological evolution that we've undergone in this past 20, 30 years, creating art has become something of a more private pursuit, in the sense that we don't need to all flock to one city to do it, you know? You look at Portland, you look at Austin, you look at San Francisco, you look at some smaller cities on the East Coast and on the West Coast. Look at Colorado and what's happening there. And you see that there's a lot of interesting stuff happening. I mean, the ecological movement has obviously become very popular in these cultural circles, and it's been less, I think this generation is less focused on the raw artistic output that we saw in the 60s and 70s, and more on maybe the intellectual creativity of these ecologically minded individuals or groups, kind of looking to affect change and to make change. I think, you know, ecological change has become the new cultural mode nowadays. I don't think it's everywhere, you know, I think it's happening everywhere. I mean, obviously there's a lot of interesting things happening in South America. But New York sells, man, it makes money. We've invested a lot of money, a lot of time, a lot of energy into the image of New York, and people still believe this myth that New York is where you have to go if you want to do something interesting. But it's not, because it's too expensive. And for you to really kind of afford to live in New York, you either need to be the son or daughter of a rich, wealthy individual, or you need to be working in finance, mostly finance. A lot of people working in finance. And it creates an atmosphere where, you know, it's nearly impossible to have the same kind of artistic atmosphere as there was, you know, just a couple of generations ago, or the last generation. It's impossible. It's impossible to have the same kind of cultural atmosphere. It's too expensive. The rent's too high. We're forced to work too hard. And I feel like that the time has passed. I mean, New York is kind of like a star that's been burnt out for long ago, but you can still see the star in the sky. But you don't know it's dead, because light takes so long to travel to your eyes that, well, that's New York. You know, New York is dead, and the French haven't seen it yet because it's too far away. You know, one day. I mean, it's the same for America too. I mean, like I said, with the internet, it's so much easier to engage in small independent projects, artistic projects, culture projects, ecological, technological projects, to connect with other people around the world. That's become less a question of city or a question of locality. It's become more a question of individuals and groups that are bound together by the internet or by other kind of social ties. Which I don't think it's a question of city anymore. I don't think any city can claim to be a cultural capital in this day and age.
Thank you. Do you have a special message to give before the end of this interview?
I don't know.
I'm wondering, Arabic people in the States, after the 11, did they move away?
No, not to my knowledge. I mean.
Because I imagine it's going to be very, very hard to be in the States as an Arabic.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I can only imagine. I mean, I have friends, many friends in America, with Arab origins. I mean, from, they're American. They've been in the States for a while, and they were brought up speaking our language, and it's tough. It's tough. I think that's the biggest problem when we see the fear of radicalization. Is we're treating a bunch of people like criminals who are not criminals. And when you're treated like a criminal and have done nothing wrong, I mean, that kind of that's an enraging experience. That pushes a lot of people to the edge and to do something rash and dangerous. And I think we're causing that. And so, no, I don't, I mean, personally, I don't know of anyone that's moved away after the attacks. But I do know that there's been a rise in violence against the Arab people in America after 9/11. There's been a rise in racial violence. And evidently a lot of discrimination, particularly in the South of the United States. And yeah, it's not gotten any better, I don't think. I mean, it's hard to speak globally, but it's hard to speak globally because the country is very divided. Because you have the North and the South. And I don't mean that geographically anymore. I mean that sort of, again, geographics doesn't really mean anything. And location really doesn't mean anything anymore with the internet and with...
You mean the big difference between the North and the South?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't even think it's divided by North and South anymore. I think it's divided... Again, this is the age of individuality. With the internet, with the ability to choose who you talk to, who you share information with. I mean, listen, back in the day, before internet and before media, mass media, if you lived in a northern state, you were more likely to live amongst people who were more, who had shared a certain social view. And if you lived in the south, you saw another side of the coin. But now it's not at all the case because we have right-wing news and left-wing news. We have right-wing comedy and left-wing comedy. We have right-wing entertainment and left-wing entertainment. And I say right and left very loosely. I know it really doesn't mean anything anymore. But we have this divide that's so easily accessible that you could just by choosing what you watch on TV or what you look at on the internet, you're communicating with a whole another group of people who don't necessarily need to be locally within your locale, within your social grouping. So that's changed everything. I mean, I don't think it's a question of North-South anymore. I think you see racists in New York, and you see racists in Colorado, and in Texas, and in Kansas. And you see good people in Kansas, and you see good people in Texas. So yeah, I don't think it's a North-South divide anymore. I think we're divided in what the South represented and what the North represented, which was, on the one hand, progress and tolerance and coming together as a country, and a return to classical style of living, you know, slavery and same family norms, social norms on the other hand. So, I mean, what's happened with the women's movement, what's happened with, you know, civil rights in America, what's happened in every fight, which has been, how do we push forward and how do we reconcile, or how do we, you know, well, how do we push forward and reconcile? Do we get rid of all the Arabs, or do we integrate them into our countries and communities and accept them for who they are? And so that's always been the difference between this quote-unquote left and right. And that's no longer an issue of North and South. It's an issue of, you know, individuals making individual decisions.
Okay. Thank you.
No problem.
And see you soon.
Yeah, see you soon.